Oh, Jesus Christ, I'm it, he said, and died. Whether he vainly cursed or prayed indeed, the bullets chirped in vain, 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 machine guns chuckled, tut, 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 and the big gun guffawed.
The Last Laugh, a World War I poem written by Wilfred Owen, read here by actor Sean Bean. By the time Owen wrote the verse in 1918, European soldiers were grimly familiar with the industrial-scale horrors of trench warfare.
And smiled at nothing, childlike, being dead. And the lofty shrapnel cloud leisurely gestured, "Fool!" And the falling splinters tittered. "My love," one mourned. Love language seemed his mode, till slowly lowered, his whole face kissed the mud, and the bayonet's long teeth grinned. Rabbles of shells hooted and groaned, and the gas hissed.
It's now 100 years after the start of the Great War, and yet, even now, few people know that many of these soldiers had a temporary refuge from the mud, the bombs, and the gas. They went even further down, beneath the trenches, to underground cities hidden deep within ancient rock quarries in France. Dr. Jeffrey Guskey ventured into more than 100 of these hidden cities. He's a Dallas emergency room physician and a fine art photographer, and he photographed the lost underground cities of World War I for National Geographic. Jeffrey Guskey joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you, Magna. Great to be here.
I'm going to hazard a guess that many, many people haven't even heard of them.
Or no one
knew that they existed.
Not even in France. They're all but unknown. But the French in general are very sensitive to World War I. It's still a wound in their hearts. Oftentimes, you know, we find things when we're not looking for them. I had a chance meeting with an official at the French Ministry of Defense about this other project. And he realized that I had an interest in World War I, and he opened the door to people all along the Western Front, and that led to more introductions, and I developed friendships with people at a very local level in villages. They shared their secrets.
Oh, and I mean, what secrets they must have been. I mean, first of
and
all—
And how.
And how.
There were hundreds of ancient rock quarries that happened to be close to or often directly under the trenches of World War I, and they were transformed into underground cities. They adapted them very quickly with rail, telephones, electric lights, hospitals, chapels, theaters, offices, even street signs. But the most remarkable part is the art and the emotional graffiti inscribed in stone by soldiers 100 years ago.
Now, to be clear, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but when we talk about the people who were transforming these underground cities, I mean, they were used for military purposes, right?
They were soldiers. They were armies on both sides. And these were the only places where they could find shelter. They would disappear into the ground. There were stairways to hell connecting these underground cities to the trenches. There were places where they could be human. And so there's hope here. This is a story of hope.
Well, I was wondering if you could describe to us a little bit more. I mean, you mentioned the artwork, and to hear that there would be even any artwork hidden underground after all this time is incredible. So what kind of artwork was being carved out of the stone in 1914, 1915?
It's amazing. You cannot believe. Some of it's very sophisticated. You find art that looks like Picasso, but Picasso was only 20 years old at the end of World War I. You find classical Greek-looking art. You find primitive. You find contemporary. You find folk art. And then there are the inscriptions, these emotional messages to the future that tell us that, you know, I once existed. I was here. I'm a living, breathing human being. And it's very emotional because when you're standing in these places in complete darkness and your headlight shines on the wall and you see something that no one has seen before or few have seen and it's been untouched for 100 years, it's like 100 years is yesterday.
Hmm. And Jeff, when we talk about the fact that these are cities, I mean, they really did have a lot of the amenities of cities. There's you discover a hospital and even at least one theater?
Oh, I found several theaters. There are hospitals all over the place. One of them was 700 beds. There were many different amenities. In one place, I found two chapels and a synagogue. In one place. And the theater that I most remember is a place where you still have the stage and you have carvings around the back of the stage and you can imagine performances and you can, you know, when you're standing where the soldiers would sit with the stage to your back, you're seeing light coming through because a bomb struck and the entire roof of the quarry collapsed.
Now, it is well known, at least amongst historians, that Allied tunnelers would spend months underground tunneling underneath enemy lines and oftentimes at the end basically planting explosives to blow up. That's not what this is, right?
Not at all. The tunnels were dug new during the war, and they're crawl spaces most often, and they were used offensively. And they don't have art or living quarters or the infrastructure of a city, whereas these places were large. I'm talking about really large. The one place I photographed had 18-plus miles underground in one place. And so these places are very stable. You can walk around in them once you get inside. Sometimes you have to crawl through a tiny hole. Some of these places are quite treacherous. There are live rocket shells, hand grenades, bullets on the ground, and you know, it's like going into a time capsule.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, you even encountered a table that was still set with the rations that someone had left there.
Yes, on each side there was the German and the French side. There were tables, and the wonderful people, mostly volunteers and retired men who watch over that particular site. It's called Vauquois. I can mention it because it's protected. They just put things back on the table that were laying on the ground.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, speaking to you is reminding me of a book that I read years and years and years ago by a British historian who described the First World War, and these are his words, as a catastrophe in mud and blood because of the brutality of trench warfare. But this is different with these underground cities because I hear you telling us that you have discovered how thousands of people in France fled underground to reconnect with their humanity in the face of all this cruelty.
Yeah, they lived underground and then they would go up to the trenches and fight and then disappear back under the earth. And these were modern people. They lived in high rises. They drove cars. They went to work on subways. They watched movies. And they were inundated with mass media and messaging just like we are today. And they show us how we can push back against the inhuman scale of modern life. This is the importance of this discovery to me. And this is the emotion that I feel when I'm down there. They really are us. And in many ways, 2014 is very similar to 1914.
Hmm. Well, Dr. Jeffrey Guskey is an emergency room physician in Dallas. He's also a fine art photographer, and his pictures of the lost underground cities of World War I appear in National Geographic magazine. Jeff Guskey, what a pleasure it was to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure.
And we've got some of Jeff's pictures at our website. They're really rather beautiful, and I suggest you take a look. They're at hereandnow.org. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.